Oh, I didn't realise it at all. I was always convinced, right up until tonight, that it was going to work out. It was inevitable.
4-2, Forest lead, forward by Tudgate, looking for Earnshaw. Mistake, Earnshaw in! Earnshaw buries it! Forest have hit 5 against Derby!
A fantastic free kick for Nottingham Forest. And Pearce has done it again. Big moment this, Hughes!
A shot for Longo!
25 yards out, he's going to shoot! Oh, what a goal from John Stead!
Davis, yes! Fantastic free kick! Notts County double their lead, and now they are dreaming of Meadow Lane!
Lucy seeking Cohen, he's got the better of Matter. Now Chris Gunter storming into the box. And the volley from Majewski! Fantastic goal for Nottingham Forest from Majewski! An absolute beauty!
3 minutes to go, stoppage time, 1-1, as Bent is beaten in the air by Wilson, ball breaks for Tesha, Tesha left-hand side for Osborne, bit of space for Ben Osborne towards the edge of the penalty area, the youngster goes on, smashes it home, what a strike from Ben Osborne!
This is URN Sport.
Hello there and welcome to Over the Trent here on University Radio Nottingham, your podcast bringing you everything that you need to know, keeping you up to date of all the happenings at Notts County and at Nottingham Forest. We've got an action-packed show as per usual here on this podcast. Firstly, we're going to be covering the recent results for both Forest and the Magpies in their clashes against Forest Green Rovers and Sheffield United. We're then going to be taking a big review of tomorrow's massive clash at Pride Park. It's the East Midlands derby, of course. We've then got some audio from the Notts County press conference on Thursday where Shola Amiobi got a nice birthday surprise, so that'll be a nice thing to look forward to later in the programme. Plus, we're going to be having a preview of County's upcoming fixtures. So firstly, guys, Sheffield United 2-1 win 2 weeks ago prior to the international break. A big result needed for Mark Warburton and his team. Goals from Jason Cummings and from Kieran Dowell in that match, bringing in the 2-1 win at the City Ground. Tom and Joe, did you manage to attend the match?
I was there, yeah.
It was a much-needed win. You know, we've been playing decently this season, but you look at our results on paper and we've had a very up and down, probably a poor start to the season. But we have been playing well. And I think if we'd have maybe gone and thrown away that game, like we have the past few results, people would have really started getting very frustrated. But having said that, it probably wasn't one of our better performances this season, but we managed to get a win against a very good side. They've only just come up, but they are a very good side, so it is a much needed win.
Yeah, of course, it came after a succession of three defeats, which wasn't really what Mark Warburton had intended, despite, as you say, Tom, some very good performances. Joseph, you happened to go down to the game as well. What did you make of the performance by Mark Warburton's side?
Yeah, it was an interesting one because we've had better matches, without a doubt. We played much better football at times and come away with less. I think there's a very real chance that Warburton could have gone if we lost that. If you look at previous managers, admittedly under different ownership, there is sort of an October point, or was a point before the East Midlands derby, when we do look to make changes, and we know they haven't necessarily worked. But there was animosity, certainly, on the terraces. You get that feeling with managers when no one's willing them to do badly, but at the same time, people have, I guess, this animosity growing towards them, and I think Warburton had that, certainly from people around me, where I sit. They weren't too sure about his tactics, and I think with that 2-1, he's bought himself a bit of time. It's certainly not the be-all and end-all, and there's nothing from that performance necessarily which suggests we're going to do amazingly in our next matches, and it's come at, you could argue, a bad time, because it's the international break, and that's disrupted any momentum. But overall, it's bought Warburton a bit of time, and it's put us into the East Midlands derby with at least one win in front of us, which is slightly better than Derby.
You're right, Joseph. Football fans are very fickle, and you forget that Forest were escaped relegation at the end of last season on goal difference. And yet, as soon as we start playing decent football this season, people then start getting very frustrated when results don't start coming. But the fact is, we're mid-table, and that if we can secure that kind of position come the end of the season, that's a huge success considering what a bad state the club's been in the past few seasons. But yeah, if we'd have lost that Sheffield United game and then gone into the Derby game after an international break, I can really see the pressure building on Warburton. But I'm so pleased that you managed to nick that win, even when it wasn't the best performance, because it will allow people to just be a bit more patient with him, because for me, I can really see what he's trying to do with the football club.
Jeremy, there were a lot of players in that team making sort of some of their first appearances for Forest after a very, very active transfer window for Mark Warburton during the summer. Of course, Kieran Dow and Jason Cummings did very well scoring in that game. But who else were you really impressed with on the pitch?
Like we've been saying, it's interesting that we are talking about how he has tried to change the system from a very pragmatic approach of just basically sort of doing anything he can to win to now a much more of a fluid style of and a much better sense for a football purist that does like it. I do think Cummings, though, is still probably my pick for us, and it is good to see that at last the defence is starting to get finally sourced out. I mean, we have slated Mills a bit for some of his actions, and how we said sometimes it's better when he's not on the pitch for it. Off the top of my head, I can't particularly pick one out. I mean, for a player that I would particularly sort of look at as good, because I think the system, it's taking time for the players to gel into it. I still think, you know, the fact we have still got some very promising youth players in the side is very, very important, it has to be said, to the team. I would say, though, I know that he got criticism. I think Ben Osborne still played well. I do still think that he is really one of the players for this team's future. It's just at times when he doesn't play well, people do get on his back because he is a young player and he can. People expect, are starting now to have expectations of how he can perform. But I still rate him. I still think he's probably the player which I would pick out as someone just keeping the eye on. Because I reckon maybe in the latter half of the season, if he's struggling at the start, which some people are saying he is, I think by the latter half of the season he should pick up, and he should be, hopefully, after, you know, maybe a couple of months under a new system, once it's all gelled, he should be ready for it.
Yeah, Osborne's like a lot of young players in English football. I think, you know, they start their career really brightly, and then as soon as they stop being, you know, the best player on the pitch, everyone gets very unhappy with them, and, you know, it's as if they're not allowed to not always be sensational. But, you know, Osborne's still only 23. That is very young for a footballer, and, you know, for him to come out of our academy, you know, we've got such a great player that we've produced, and he's easily the most consistent player that we've had for the past like three seasons. He's the one that's always working hard. You know, you never doubt his effort. Sometimes, you know, yes, he doesn't have the quality that people might want him to push on, but again, he's 23 and he's still in the very early years of his development. Yeah, for me, I don't question his performances ever, but people get very critical. But you've just got to remember that he's a very young player, and there's no reason why he should be expecting to perform at the level of maybe the more senior players, and yet he does.
Yeah, we've already spoken a lot how luxury players seem to be the type of player that Mark Warburton was kind of almost obsessed with signing in the transfer window, with the amount of signings he got of the sort of midfield, attacking midfield prototype. But have you been impressed with the striking lineup so far? I mean, Cummings and Murphy have got 10 goals between them so far this season.
Yeah, Murphy is an interesting one because he plays well and he gets goals, and he was brought in to replace Asamoah Belonga. And it is a new system, so it was unfair to compare the two directly. My only concern with Murphy is that he does go missing in matches. And it's okay if he pops up with a goal at the end, but when you need someone to hold up play, or when you need someone to bring in your wider players, Murphy's not always the best at doing that, and he doesn't like taking someone on. So he needs to play with someone with a pace, someone like Cummings, which is why the 3-5-2's worked a lot better than just having Murphy up top in his own. But just to come back to that question you asked earlier about standout performers in the Sheffield match, I would say Danny Fox. Danny Fox has had a hell of a lot of criticism, and almost all of it's been warranted. I went to the Chelsea match and he played at left back, and he was awful, absolutely dreadful, got beat time and time again. But recently Warburton played him at centre back, and he looks the real deal there, and I think he only played about 45-50 minutes of a match. But if he can come into that position, and if you can have someone like Fox as a centre back and then have a more attacking option at wing back like Traore, it is, to use an old cliche, like signing a new player. So although Walton's brought in a lot of new talent, and I'm sure lots of it's going to work very well this season, if he can look at players who are already at the club and perhaps lack that tactical sense that hasn't been given to him by previous managers, he could find solutions to some of our problems in players who've just been knocking about the back of a club for the last few years.
Yeah, Fox is a very weird one, and it's pretty incredible how he's managed to turn his reputation around at the club, because a couple of seasons ago he was, you know, easily, certainly my most hated player. You know, I think he is probably the worst left back in the league, and yet he's one of the better centre backs. And it was very frustrating for me the past couple of seasons seeing managers, you know, we tend to not sign left backs for some reason at Forest, but managers have been happy to keep Fox as a left back, and he's clearly very bad in that position. Yet when occasionally he plays at centre back, he's always looked really, really solid. I think Friedman moved him over there, and then Montagnier decided that he probably was a left back again. But finally, I think the Warburton is realising that Fox should not be playing at left back, and actually he's a decent centre back.
Yeah, the 3-5-2 formation is an interesting one, Jeremy, because it does very much cater, as we've mentioned, for Forest's attacking play and the style that Warburton likes them to produce, as well as the productivity of the strikers Murphy and Cummings as well. But it was noticeable in that game against Sheffield United that Forest were sometimes very, very vulnerable in the wide positions defensively. Especially the fact that Sheffield United scored so early in that match and were on the front foot for the majority of the first half. Do you kind of see that as quite a worry, that Traore and Dariqua are quite attacking-minded, and that this formation could have a downside to it?
Yeah, it can. I mean, the 3-5-2, when it's basically set up, the basic principle of it is you are focusing a lot on potentially overflowing the midfield and dominating that with a strong amount of midfield possession play and passing it through, but you need wing-backs that will happily run up and down the pitch all day long. That's why, you know, when you see clubs in England, right, you know, right down the league, for example, clubs are now, right, you know, down the whole of the English football, clubs are starting to try and play in this system. It doesn't work unless the full-backs are, I mean, again, in my sort of football purist thing, you know, I can happily sit here and rant about it, but every position in a football team obviously has to be important. Everyone has to play to their specific bit, but in a 3-5-2, really, your wing backs are arguably the most important, because they are providing pretty much your only width for the whole thing, for the whole game for you. Yes, it's handy to have attacking wing backs like Traore, for example, and Dariqua, but if they aren't prepared then to track back, that's then the key bit. You know, you can overload your opposition on the wings, but the flip side, if you then get a counter-attack, as we saw in the game against Sheffield, it really then becomes a problem for you, because you can then get caught napping and you can then get caught vulnerable. And, you know, also Sheffield, you know, like the guys have said, they've started the season fantastically. You know, they're in the top four at the moment of the league, and it's a team that, if you are going to play that, you need to have your defensive discipline on point. And sometimes in a 3-5-2, your centre backs will drift out wide to cover a little bit of the gaps left. But as we discussed, you know, if that then happens, and you've got to then put Fox back out towards the left back position, that's not where he's strongest. He's better just keeping him in the middle. And it's a case, really, I think with Forest, that they do have players that can fit it and it can work, but there are great big holes left at times in that defence, and it is something which I think teams might start to be picking up on, and it's going to be interesting now to see how Warburton adapts and addresses that. Does he shift Fox then as the central centre-back and maybe swap Mansion maybe out onto the wing to cover that area potentially when a defender pushes up, which could be done because Mansion is a bit more technical than Fox, I think it's safe to say, so he might be a bit more alert and able to adapt to that. But I prefer to see Mansion down the centre as the flip side argument, because he is one of the more technical centre-backs we have at Forest, and he can control the ball quite well at his feet, yeah, at times in comparison to the others.
It's clear that Warburton, you know, needs at least one or two more transfer windows to really get the players he needs. It's sort of been the story of the season so far, that Warburton's trying to get a group of players to play a certain way when it's clearly not the way they were meant to play as footballers. You know, Joe Waugh was a great young player, but I'm not sure, you know, I don't think Mark Warburton would have gone out and signed Joe Worrell if he was at a different club. Having said that, he's a fantastic young player. But yeah, we definitely lack the kind of defenders and of course the goalkeeper that Warburton really wants. It's a shame what happened with Federici. We signed him on loan from Bournemouth, and then of course he predictably got injured with Australia, so he obviously never made an appearance for Forest in the end. But you know, Smith again, another brilliant young player that Forest had produced, but clearly not the one that Warburton exactly wants. So I think give it one or two more transfer windows, and you'll see him get those signed a lot of silky players up top like Cummings and Clough. But we probably need to see the players he wants at the back as well.
Yeah, it's just a case of shoring things up defensively in the next couple of transfer windows for Mark Warburton to get the kind of squad he needs to adapt to the 3-5-2 formation. Just to touch on an aspect off the pitch on Saturday, there was the ticket deal of £20 for adults at the match at the City Ground, which was an offer that ran throughout September. Joe and Tom, you're both season ticket holders at the club. How much of a boost do you think it gives the team when the City Ground is almost sold out? Because it was, I think the attendance was in excess of 26,000 in that game against Sheffield United, which contributes massively to how the players are able to perform on the pitch.
Clubs often think about how much money they can make from tickets, and they often fail to see kind of a long-term plan that if you make tickets a bit cheaper and fill the ground, that might benefit the club a lot more in the long term. I think Forest is certainly one of those teams that rely on their support to carry them through the tough moments. It's great when the City Ground's packed out, and often you can see the players not really going for it in past couple of seasons when we've had pretty low attendances. But I think there's a fixture coming up, like £5 for students. So hopefully they can pack out again.
Yeah, Burton, they're doing a deal on for that match. I think about £5 for students and even less for concessions and youngsters. And it's all part of what the new owner, Evangelos, is trying to do. He's trying to implement, I think, the European idea that a bigger stadium and a fuller stadium is better than a stadium that's half full with £30-40 per ticket. And that's really going to benefit the players, because the City Ground is one of the larger stadiums in the Championship still. And you notice when it's not full. When it's empty, It has this sort of energy, atmosphere sapping vibe. And if you want to have a successful football club, they do need to be supported. I know it's a cliche, we talk about the 12th man and things like that, but when Middlesbrough came, for example, and Assun Belonga was back, the atmosphere that was generated at that match was so powerful, it completely threw Assun Belonga off his game. And if we can do that in other matches, then we can nick results which perhaps we wouldn't have been able to do without the backing of the fans. So that's really important. The only flip side to that is, in some of these occasions, when you have a large crowd expecting a victory, because the people who come on these deals are sometimes not the diehard Forest fans that will come to any match, and sometimes they want quicker results and they want to see goals and attacking football from the outset. Sometimes you can have the crowd on the team's back, and that happened towards the end of the Fulham game where we were 1-1. Probably would have been sensible to settle for a draw, but no, fans were demanding that we threw on extra strikers, and we saw in the end we lost that game 3-1. And that game was about 24,000 people. So the fans there certainly came away disappointed, and a lot of them did create a negative atmosphere, and it was encouraging to see the team bounce back from that. But there is a flip side to having a full stadium, but I'd much rather have one full than half full, which is what we've seen in the last few years.
Yes, absolutely. That atmosphere generated there has certainly served Forest performances well. We're going to move on now to discuss, of course, Forest's upcoming fixture tomorrow at 1 o'clock at Pride Park Stadium. Forest against Derby County, the big East Midlands derby. Just some team news ahead of that match. Gary Rowett has no new injury concerns, with Chris Martin, Vyman, Matty Vidra, David Nugent all competing for the forward places. Of course, he outperformed Sam Winnell, might be dropped to the bench along with Tom Lawrence as well. Forest midfielders Matty Cash and David Vaughan are still absent although both are close to return after featuring for the under-23s during the week. Former Derby attacker Jamie Ward is available following a calf problem, so that'll be interesting to see if he returns, maybe on the bench or in the starting lineup in Sunday's game. 3,000 fans will be making the short journey down the A52 for that match from Nottingham. Guys, you've obviously probably got experience of an East Midlands derby before. How do you think the game's going to go, and what kind of is going to be playing on the players' minds, especially those that are very familiar with the derby atmosphere, like Osborne, Worrell, players of that ilk?
Well, derby games are almost impossible to predict. You know, they're the only games that you have no idea how they're going to go. The only thing you can say for sure is that it's not going to be like any game that we've had so far this season. The story is going to be very different whatever happens. I hope the story is that Forest go and try and play the stuff they've been doing all season. And, you know, whilst we've been lacking the cutting edge this season with the chances and the passing we're doing, to actually put away these chances, hopefully the derby atmosphere, you know, sparks these players into life and it gives them the edge. And, you know, of course, you criticise Forest's start to the season, but ultimately Derby are a team that should have got promoted 3 years ago, and they've managed to mess it up year on year. And yet again, they're below Forest in the table this year, so they've got a real problem on their hands, because, you know, they should be up there. They're a team that, you know, have spent the money and brought in the personnel that you expect them to go and win the league, and yet they're below Forest, who have obviously come out of a very tricky period in their history and are really still trying to lick their wounds and repair themselves. So Derby, you know, Derby are the ones that are under pressure for this fixture. Forest can go there and try and play the stuff that they have been doing all season, and you know what, if it doesn't work this time, you know, people can forgive it, but Derby need to, you know, get themselves into gear and actually they're the ones that really desperately need to get a result here. So the pressure's off Forest, I think.
Yeah, Derby's form coming into this fixture, 3 draws and a 4-1 defeat against Bristol City as well. But prior to that, though, they did win 5-0 against Hull City early in September. But Forest will come into this game, of course, with a massive boost, having stopped the rut of 3 games in succession in defeat with that 2-1 win against Sheffield United. Joe, sad in a way that David Vaughan still remains absent. He's a fantastic and integral player in Forest's starting lineup, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a very important player, and lots of our defensive fragility has been due to the fact that he's not there to protect them. But on the Derby point, they lost 3 very important players over the summer. They lost Christie, Hughes and Ince. And I don't know if we should expect them to be challenging in the way they have done in previous years, because although they've replaced those players, that did signal to me that they weren't necessarily confident that they could secure automatic promotion this year. Because if you think you're going up, you don't sell players to rivals. Christie to Middlesbrough, prime example, selling to a rival club. You don't do that if you're completely confident in your abilities. On the notion of East Midlands derby, over the last few years, it's either been extremely one-sided. Think about the end of a Billy Davis reign, for example. Or it's been a tight match, just like last year, with Pinnilos scoring the last-minute equaliser. So it should be an exciting match. I reckon the first 20 minutes will set the tone. If in those 20 minutes one team is completely dominant, I'd expect that to carry on throughout the whole match. But if we get a sort of live and feisty encounter, as we certainly could do with the teams separated by just 2 points, then it could be a classic match. And for the first time that I can remember, we're not coming into this on the back of some really bad form. So hopefully that bodes well for us.
Yeah, certainly we'll hope that recent result does bode well going into this fixture. Jeremy, Joe just touched on the fact that Derby sold a lot of their attacking midfielders during the summer transfer window, and they're without another tomorrow in the suspended Bradley Johnson, who's a massive player for them as well.
Yeah, it will be handy for Forest with that, in the sense that they have obviously now weakened themselves quite substantially. And Joe's hit the nail on the head there. You know, if Derby did have intentions of going up, why have they now made this the moment to let go of? I think Ince and Hughes are the 2 which I pick out. I mean, Ince is obviously, it's a weird one with Ince. Everyone's, you know, lots of times people thought he was going to be the next big thing. He's made big moves at times, and it's just really his backfire. He's never sort of found, really particularly found his form, and I don't think he has done just yet. Hughes, I think, is the bigger one, because he's been touted so much that he was finally going to make that move. He did make it finally to Watford, and you know, he hasn't lit the Premier League alight yet, but I mean, Watford are doing very well up there. But back in the Championship, when we look at it, I mean, Derby, yes, they're below us, but they have got, you know, they have got a game in hand on Forest, so they could leapfrog us. I think at the moment they could leapfrog us if they win, and then have that extra advantage. This is, you know, the East Midlands Derby, and it is really the biggest, one of the biggest games of the whole season for both clubs, really. And with both clubs at the moment in a mid-table scrap, it will be. I would say probably as to what Derby might do for their attacking lineup, I don't particularly know. I think most likely Vidra will probably start, and I think Martin is another likely for it. I think Nugent won't, and I think as for Andres Weimann, he might, but I don't know. Maybe out on the wing, probably potentially playing on the left, but I don't think he would be my first choice. I think I would go for Martin and Vidra if I was Gary Rothwell.
Yeah, Gary Rowat's had a bit of a selection problem in the top end of his formation, because he's been persisting quite a bit with Sam Winnall as a lone striker, but he's not scored any goals in the past four matches for the Rams recently, and then of course Tom Lawrence as well. So it'll be interesting to see how things pan out in the East Midlands Derby tomorrow. Of course, last season's fixtures, as Joe alluded to there, a 2-2 draw at the City Ground and a 3-0 defeat at Derby County earlier in the 2016-17 season. But Forest fans in the building today, Tom and Joe, what have been your favourite Derby memories from years gone by? I mean, you cast your memory back to that Rob Earnshaw goal and the 5-2 win back in 2011, as well as that Ben Osborne strike in 2014. What for you was the best moment, seeing it live or maybe in highlights, or what was the best moment for you guys?
I'm going to go for one that probably a lot of people will have forgotten by now, but it's still pretty recent. It must be two seasons ago now. At home, Dougie Friedman, who, you know, controversial figure, but somebody I'll always defend what he did at Forest. But yeah, thinking back to Nelson Oliveira, we had the embargo, and we managed to sign a very good striker on with the embargo situation in Nelson Oliveira. I think it was like 13th minute, I don't know how I remember it so well, but 13th minute, Nelson Oliveira just sort of out of the blue grabs the only goal of the game very early on. And then, you know, it's one of the least exciting games that you'll ever see, but I just loved how we, you know, sort of just grabbed that goal out of the blue through Nelson, and then in classic Friedman style then didn't attack for the rest of the game, sort of sat back, and Derby just, you know, you could tell we were getting so frustrated with the way we sort of defended under Friedman. But yeah, that's a moment that I really loved. It's not one that springs to mind for most people, and it's not the most memorable Derby that's ever happened, but I think Derby were flying at that point, and we were obviously in a really bad situation as a club on and off the pitch, but just sort of in classic Friedman style, we sort of just nicked a goal. We only ever scored like one goal, if we ever scored, in those games that season, and then held out for the next like 80 minutes of the match.
That wasn't on my list of classics, but any win against Derby is a good match as far as I'm concerned. I think a couple of memories from the Doughty era, one of them would be the 5-2, has to be remembered, and with Earnshaw cartwheeling away, former club and everything, what derbies are made of. Also, the Lee Camp penalty save in a Derby match, really, really good. But I have to go for the Ben Osborne. And it's bittersweet because it was part of, you know, the end of Stuart Pearce's reign, and every Forest fan, regardless of what he thought for us, was rooting for the team at that side. We all want, at that time, we all wanted Stuart Pearce to do well. When Son Belonga scored, and then obviously Osborne with effectively the last kick of a match, and there's pandemonium in the crowd, and we're at Derby's, which makes it even better, and we've robbed the win there. I think when that happened, we all thought, right, this is it, this is going to happen now for Stuart, because he had a great start, flying start. That was when we had Antonio and Son Belonga in the team, and then we hit that mid-season lull, which happens a lot at Forest. And I thought that would kickstart our season, and I thought Stuart would be able to stay at the club That didn't happen, but it's a good memory nonetheless, and it's endeared Ben Osborne to Forest fans, and we still sing about it on the terraces.
Yeah. So I know I said Nelson Oliveira a minute ago, but that's just me trying to sort of think outside the box here, because the obvious answer is Ben Osborne's winner. What is it, 3 seasons ago now? You know, obviously that's the best moment we've had in recent years in this East Midlands derby. Yeah, it was just everyone knew it was not working for Psycho, and it was just, you know, brilliant to see him get that one result that, you know, he really, really wanted. So yeah, it, obviously that is, I think, the best derby moment that we've seen, certainly as young fans.
And Psycho will be remembered for that. His managerial reign will be remembered for that image of him sort of, you know, running into a technical area. He won't be remembered for the defeats or the draws. You can't think of him off the top of your head. He'll be remembered for a fantastic playing career and that one match as a manager.
Yeah, certainly that goal in 2015 really does stick out in the mind of many Forest fans across the East Midlands. We do hope that they do come away with a result at Derby tomorrow. Kick-off 1:15 at the iPro Stadium. We hope that Forest, Mark Warburton and his side can continue from their result at Sheffield United on a potential winning run and get that result at Derby County. We're going to move matters now over the Trent to discuss what's been happening recently at Notts County, and their most recent result was last week, a 1-1 draw at Meadow Lane against bottom of the table Forest Green Rovers. A goal from Rob Milson right at the end of the game saved County's blushes against the bottom side in League 2. Kevin Nolan very much thought after the game that it was a point gained rather than a point dropped, but do you think, Jeremy, that County should have come away with a result in that game? I mean, they are playing a team that are bottom of the league, and considering their league position second in the league, 26 points behind Exeter City, they should really be looking for more than that.
Oh, you've got to love football, haven't you, Joe? Every time we think we can come up with a clear-cut answer to what we see as a prediction, it's something backfires. Yeah, I think a lot of County fans view that game as a real, real, you know, I think it's probably one of the a real egg on their face, really, because, you know, first versus bottom, they're in a bit, you know, they've had a bit of a bumpy run of form at the moment. Just after Kevin Nolan obviously then gets the Manager of the Month award, then things start to potentially hit a few snags. I mean, Joe talked earlier about the fact, you know, when fans, for example, at Forest, you know, when you've got a full stadium, fans want to see the team do well, and the same thing applied, I think, with that game against Forest. Against Forest Green Rovers, lots of students went down to that game because obviously the discount was offered to them, which was great to see for that. But I think by the end of it, the atmosphere, by all accounts, I unfortunately wasn't able to attend, I was on here, but I think the atmosphere by all accounts was starting to turn a little bit poisonous because of the fact that people had it gone expecting to see County perform. And, you know, yeah, like you said, they were saved. Their blushes were saved at the end thanks to that late strike by Rob Milson. But I don't know. I mean, if County really do now have serious hopes of getting a promotion, then that's a game you've got to win. They've lost the top place now to Exeter, who have leapfrogged them. They're now 2 points above them, and that's, you know, that's a worry for County. You know, those are the games where really you say you should be winning games in football, but you can only win what's put in front of you, and that's a match they need to be winning. Yes, it's still early on in the season. Yes, they're still up there fighting the top they're obviously in the top two. But come the end of the season, if County aren't getting promoted after, I mean, obviously we don't sometimes say that we can jump the gun here, but they've got one of the biggest stadiums in the whole of League 2. They are a good team when you watch them play. They can play well, and the team clearly is behind Nolan. And if they don't get promoted, they're probably going to look back on games like the Forest Green match and say, you know, maybe if we'd had those two extra points, that could have just given us that little bit extra and given the fans just that little bit more to cheer about.
Yeah, certainly. I think the phrase is sleeping giant when it comes to Notts County and their stadium's capacity, as well as their club status and history as a whole, and the fact that they are in League 2 and will want to get out of the division as soon as possible. Tom, just looking at the starting lineup there, Nolan opted to bring in Jonathan Fort, a player that hasn't really seen a lot of game time recently, alongside John Stead, who's of course been informed player so far this season for County. Do you think that maybe had anything to do with the fact that they registered exactly the same amount of shots on target as their opposition, probably didn't convert all of their possession into as many goals as they would have liked?
Yeah, they really didn't play well. You know, they've been playing great stuff this season, but that was certainly a really bad performance against a side they're supposed to go and turn over. But yeah, I think Fort's a difficult one because he's clearly their third choice striker and he's started the past like three games. He's not managed to score. He's only got two goals this season. The other boys have been doing a little better. But for me, when you think about their strike partnership, they've kind of just got three of the three very similar players, you know, just that that classic big man up front who sort of holds it up and sort of is a bit of a rough player. And they sort of need to maybe sign a young striker, you know, somebody who it just gives them a little something different, because I think their three players are very similar. And you've also got to look at their age, you know. Jonathan Fort is their youngest first team striker at 31 years, and then if you look at all three strikers together, they've got a combined age of 101. You know, that's crazy for a strike partnership to be that old together. So I think Fort, you know, he's already actually doubled his assist tally from last season. He's only got two assists, but I think it maybe suggests that he can play. You know, he's maybe not going to be banging in the goals this season, but County have signed two very good wingers in Terry Hawkridge and Lewis Alessandra, and I think Jonathan Fort can perhaps, you know, they've got these three strikers, one of them Jonathan Fort, that are these big men up front that can hold the ball up, and with these two wingers coming into play that they didn't have last season, they didn't have players like that, they can use these strikers to bring other people into the game, to get other people scoring, so you don't actually have to rely on these three ageing strikers.
Yeah, certainly it is a problem of enough energy going forward for not County. But George A. Grant, one of Nottingham Forest's own, has got 8 goals so far this season in League 2. Joe, how impressed have you been with his start to the season for Notts County?
Yeah, he's doing very well. And we were touching on it earlier, we have an abundance of attacking midfielders at Forest, and it was unlikely to get too many games with us. So it was good to see him going somewhere else and getting important game time, which he'll need for his development, and to see him flourishing. I wasn't expecting him to score so many goals, but if he does want to become a good championship player, which he'll need to be to break into the Forest team, he should be scoring goals at this level. So I guess it's a relief from everyone at Forest to see him doing so well. The thing about County is they are in many respects a complete opposite from the Mark Warburton football team. Nolan linked up with Allardyce a lot in his playing career at Bolton, at Newcastle, and there's all the hallmarks of a Sam Allardyce team at Notts County, which is perhaps what's needed in League 2 when you're playing on worse surfaces, the ball's not going to roll as nicely, and the easiest way to get it up is to, you know, hoof it up to the big man. So that won't benefit Grant in the sense that he won't be learning too much tactically, I don't think. He certainly won't be able to slot straight back into the Forest team based on what he's learned at County, but you can't take the goals away from him, and hopefully he continues this season. I'd like to see him do a full season at County and then be vying for starting place next year at Forest.
Yeah, that's exactly a big thing which Joe's just touched on there. I mean, if Forest and County are to loan players between each other, that's going to be a big issue. I mean, you know, following on from what I was saying earlier, you know, in a 3-5-2, you do need players that can fit a system, can learn how it plays. If you then go down to the Championship and play then in your archetypal Sam Allardyce-esque 4-4-2, you know, where you're depending on the big men and the wingers in a classic sort of, you know, old-style English play, it's really going to be quite difficult then for Grant to come back, and then it'd be expected, right, you have to, you know, focus on your possession play, passing it, move around technically, cover the areas and etc., and work out things as you would. But one thing which, you know, the four, it work, it's obviously much more practical in League 2 because it depend. You need the players that can understand the system, and you don't often get that, especially in English football. I mean, we are notoriously slow in England when it comes to picking up a new style of, you know, playing style. We're very stubborn, we like to stick to our guns in terms of what we believe, and it works at times. You know, you look at Sam Allardyce's career, it works, and the signing of players like Liam Noble, for example, bringing him back to the club, it's a classic kind of move you sort of expect by Kevin Nolan. He's sticking to his guns and he's following through what he believes, which you've got to give a manager credit when, you know, that this sort of style, it gets shunned that sometimes people say, oh, don't play, you know, dull long ball into the box, use your head and nod it down. It's worked for people like Sam Allardyce. It doesn't sometimes work for us, but Nolan's been with him, Big Sam, I think, for long enough that you can probably say that's going to be how he's going to play for most of his career. And if it works, brilliant. And fingers crossed, touch wood, etc., that it does work for Forest this it does work for Counts this season, and that Forest system, they can potentially, I hope that Forest youngsters do keep going to County, because I think it's good for the two clubs in that respect, and it helps them to work off each other. But I hope that they're ready then to go back to Forest and potentially, right, forget everything you learned about that system, now you're going to play Forest's way.
But it's not just an aspect of sort of hit and hope, Route 1 football, if you pardon pun there. With, you know, the recent signature of Noble for a second time kind of reflects that, ball playing midfielder, as well as players like George A. Grant, Lewis Alessandro and Tony Hawkridge on the wings, you know, in the kind of the mould of a sort of silky player with a bit of energy as well to their game, which can supply assists and the good service needed for John Stead and Chodor Amiobi up front. Tom, do you think that this kind of misconception in a way is sort of construed a bit one way or the other with the fact that Kevin Nolan, you know, has played under Allardyce a lot, and therefore people think he's immediately going to implement a similar style of football, or do you think that his methods are slightly different?
I think he's definitely a different manager. You know, he's learnt a lot from this kind of, in Allardyce you've got almost the master of the English way of playing, him and Pulis you look at there, and Nolan's learnt from one of the best. Obviously it's something you wouldn't, managers, you know, in English football in general, to kind of move on from. You know, you get people like Warburton coming in that are kind of breaking the mould, but it does work. You know, you can't complain about your playing style if you're, you know, not at the top of the Premier League, basically, in my opinion. You know, whatever works for you is what you should play. Having said that, you know, I wouldn't criticise, you know, Warburton's approach at Forest for going for something that perhaps wouldn't, if he'd have changed his style, he might have got better results. But ultimately, you've got to do what works and think about the long term. And I think, you know, Nolan's, you can't fault the job he's done coming in at County. He's got them playing a club that, you know, just needed somebody who was an up and coming person in the game. They've gone through a lot of kind of old tired managers that you know aren't going places in the game, and in Nolan they've got somebody who is, you know, being realistic, is quite likely to be picked away very soon. I'm not sure I agree with Hardy when he's talking about England and Premier League clubs right now, but you know, certainly if he keeps doing what he's doing, Kante are going to really struggle to hold on to him.
Yeah, they certainly are. And you touch on Hardy in his comments last week. Now upcoming on the fixture list for Notts County this week, they've got Barnet away down in northwest London, where they hope to re-establish their dominance at the top of League Two and pip Exeter City to first place, who are 2 points ahead of them currently in the standings. But we're going to hear now from Notts County's press conference prior to that match. The press conference on Thursday, where Kevin Nolan and Chodor Amiobi attended, and there was a special birthday surprise for the former Newcastle striker.
This is URN Sport.
Kevin, let's talk about Liam Noble then. How pleased are you finally to have got your man?
Yeah, delighted. Obviously, circumstances for him and Forest Green was, you know, between him and Forest Green. For me, he was someone that we obviously chased in the summer, offered a lot of money for him. So it was an opportunity for me this week to have a good chat with him and see where he was at and what he was doing, and then for me to make a decision with my staff and see if Liam Noble comes into this team and makes it better, or does Liam Noble come in and make it any weaker in the dressing room or on the pitch. And I think, speaking to the lad, I think he's only going to be a good addition, and really looking forward to working with him. I think we can still improve him in a lot of areas. He's got a long way, obviously got a long way to actually make his debut for us again, which will be his second debut. And you know, but he's coming into a different club now. He's left a club which is totally different. Now he's coming into a club which we made clear to him the standards which he's got to stick to and raise, not bring them down. So it's a nice thing for him that he can come now and want to prove a lot of people wrong, and hopefully that's what he'll do. But first and foremost, just like to say, I'm delighted for him to be here, and hopefully we'll work well together.
Are you surprised that somebody you bid reported a six-figure fee for in the summer, you've got the player a few months later for nothing?
Very, yeah. But that's football, and when things don't work out, you sort of, in the summer we were a bit disappointed not to land them, because we thought that was enough, but it wasn't to be. But we've had the opportunity now to get them, so for me, it was a no-brainer in our respect, because there's a lot of people who know him. A lot of people have got an opinion about Liam Norwell, and they'll have opinions about him because of his past and all that. But I play with a lot of characters, shall we say, in my time, as a captain, and sometimes you need them type of characters to take your team, because the ability he's got on the field will only give us another option and be a fantastic other option for us as well. So it just, for me, it was about adding to the squad with quality, and we're hoping, we can get him fit. We will get him fit. He's got a lot of time to work with us, and he's got a lot of time to know what this club's about now and what we expect and demand of each other day in, day out. So I'm sure, we'll see a different Liam Norwell to what we've seen when he was previously here.
Barnet this weekend. Be good to get
finally
get back on track. Wait till we get to January and we start talking about chance to get back on track after getting a point last week.
Yeah, it was a point game and we were delighted with it. We're looking back at the game, we've watched it numerous times. Don't think it's as bad as what I thought. Feel that we dominated for large patches of the game. They scored and we seem to have, as I said, we seem to have lacked that little bit of composure. We seem to have lacked a bit. We got a bit anxious, if you like, and it's something what we've got to learn to cope with, because the fans were fantastic coming in the numbers, and we asked them to stay patient because the expectations changed, and we all know that, and the expectation of the fans now is to be talking about promotion, when last year when we first walked in we were talking about relegation. In 9 months' time, we've got to remember how far we've come in such a short space of time. So for me, it's about making sure that we keep that level head and trying to get back to basics this weekend. And if we do that, as I say all the time, if we turn up and we play well, it gives us a massive chance of getting 3 points.
What about Barnet? What are their strengths?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously they've lost a lot of players over the coming weeks. I don't know. We probably won't know until Saturday or late Friday that how many of them are going to be back this week. But they're a good side and they can cause you problems. But we feel that we can handle that. If we can handle that, we've got a great chance of exploiting their weaknesses, and that's what we've been working on today and we'll be working on tomorrow, hoping that we can get the 3 points and get back to winning ways, because that's what we want now. But there's no pressure on the boys. I said to them today, what they've done, the only pressure what they've got is the ones what they put on themselves now. Don't take no pressure off anyone else. They've deserved to be where they are because of the outstanding performances, and all they've got to try and do now is put pressure on themselves to get back up to their high standards. But from me, there's no pressure. I feel that they've been absolutely fantastic, and if they continue in with the work and what they're doing on the training field and with the attitude and I said, and the dedication, application, all them words which you're going to keep repeating, if they continue to keep doing that, then I feel that we will be okay.
On injuries, where are you this weekend?
Yeah, well, we're fully fit squad. Yeah, DJ's, nearing a return. He's now there or thereabouts. Probably might come a bit too soon Saturday, but I'm fully fit and we're ready to go.
Listen, we're in a fantastic, fantastic place where no one expected us to be.
Yeah.
No one. We've got lots of teams in and around us who've got massive budgets and bigger budgets than ours, but our squad, I feel, that can match anyone. it doesn't matter how much you pay them or what, it's what the lads give and the respect and the, what they've earned from each other and their attitude towards wanting to be the best they can be. And listen, I can't fault any one of them, and I'm delighted to be obviously part of it, and hopefully we can continue on this great run. We've lost one and drew one.
Sheila, first of all, many happy returns.
Actually, ship is from start. Sheila. I've got a light to join in.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Sheila. Happy birthday to you.
Thanks, guys. Yay. Good afternoon. Is this a nod to how slow I run on a pitch? Thanks, guys. Appreciate that.
Return,
that will be getting eaten later. Cheers, mate. Thank you.
Notts could probably do with a performance this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you know, listen, it's been obviously from the run we've had beginning of the season, the last two results haven't quite been what we wanted, but I think we've all taken stock this week and come back together as a squad of players and management team and just look how far we've come. Obviously it's disappointing when you don't get maximum points at home, but the great thing is we've got another chance Saturday again to hopefully put our stamp on the team, you know, show the fans that we're still, you know, we've still got plenty to give, and I think Saturday is going to, you'll see a good example of what we're about as a team.
It's a fair example of where you've come, is it, when everybody leaves massively disappointed after a home draw?
Yeah, it is. You definitely see the culture change now. You know,
which is a good thing, sure.
Yeah, definitely. You know, going in the dressing room at the weekend after the game, it was, you know, the heads were down. Even though we had obviously nicked a point at the end, we were still disappointed after the game, which for me, you know, seeing that is, you know, shows as a team, as a squad of players, we've come a long way.
Yeah, so happy birthday there for Sheila Amiobi, and all the best to Notts County in their upcoming fixture against Barnet on Saturday. That will be it here on Over the Trent for this week. Do stay tuned to our latest podcast on www.audioboom.com/URNSpeech, or follow our social media channels at URN Sports on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram as well. That's it for this week. Thank you, Jeremy, Joe and also Tom for joining me on this week's Over the Trent, and we'll see you again very, very soon.